Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast, episode 32. I'm your host, Pete Brooker, and in this episode, we'll be talking to none other than Savile Row tailor Richard Anderson. Richard was one of the youngest cutters ever at Huntsman & Sons, and in 2001, he went on to open his own business, becoming the first bespoke tailoring house to open on the row in 50 years. Here's a clip of the interview.
I think one of the great things with Savile Row and the main houses, though, some people could assume that a Savile Row suit is a Savile Row suit, but it's, you know, each house produces slightly differently, each house cuts slightly differently, and each house has a slightly different atmosphere and ambience.
So Richard will be coming to the US in September, and he's taking bookings now on his website, which is Richard Anderson LTD, so head over there. We'll be dishing out the dates in the interview, but you can check him out on his website, which is richardandersonlimited.com. And if you're stateside, then get yourself booked in. Time to start looking like you mean business, people. We'll also be doing a news roundup with editor-at-large Beck Loads. She'll be giving me the lowdown on the runners and riders that graced the red carpet at the GQ Awards.
We've got some more velvet from Sacha Baron Cohen. He was picking an award on the night. That was a Paul Smith suit. Also, again, very nice. We had, of course, legend Jeff Goldblum. I think he was one of the standouts as well. He has to be.
And that's all to come, but make sure you're checking out the website www.menswearstyle.co.uk for all your latest on fashion, travel, cars, what kind of fertilizer you need to grow your beard, what to get your beard for Christmas. You know, we've got it all going on over there. Subscribe in iTunes if you haven't done that already, and follow us on the social at Menswear Style. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, then email us here at info@menswearstyle.co.uk, okay? Ooh, let's get it on. I'd like to welcome to the podcast now Richard Anderson, Savile Row tailor extraordinaire. Richard, how are you doing today?
Very well, thanks, Peter. Yes, very well, thank you. Just back from a holiday in Croatia, so feeling quite perky, actually.
Oh, wonderful. Excellent. How was Croatia?
Very good, yeah. Nice food, nice weather. So, it's been a very busy year, so it was nice to sort of kick back for a couple of weeks, quite frankly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, so much to talk about, Richard. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. 101 different questions. They're all probably going to come out a bit scattergun, but here we go.
Sure.
If we could start with, what are your earliest memories? So you started working at the Huntsman. You were one of the youngest cutters to ever work at the Huntsman, if my facts tell me correctly. What were the fondest memories that you had, and what were the deciding factors that made you want to leave the Huntsman and ultimately set up on your own?
Well, Huntsman's was there was lots of cutters at Huntsman's. I mean, Huntsman's was 160. Or 165, 170 year old company now. So when I joined in 1982, they were still well established, and there had been lots of cutters before me. And but what I was the youngest head cutter in their history when I at the age of, I don't know, 32, 33. So I started a cutting apprenticeship there when I was 17. And I loved it. I mean, I absolutely loved it. It was like a completely different world, you know, coming from my comprehensive school in Watford, which was great, into the hallowed halls of Huntsman's, which was then probably the best world and most renowned and most prestigious tailors in the West End. So it was a culture shock. But what I loved about them, it was very obvious that they were the best. What they do, they're extremely proud of what they achieved. Their eye for detail and their level of quality was sort of second to none. And you had to sort of sink or swim in that environment. But I love the challenge of it.
Mm. And I mean, you're number 13, Savile Row. So you're only a couple of doors down.
Sure.
Do you still kind of go around there and invite yourself around for a cup of tea, and vice versa? Are you still on good terms with those guys?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Savile Row's it's like a village. We all know each other. There's no one there left from my time at all there. I mean, I've left Huntsman's sort of 17 years now, and it's also gone through a couple of changes in ownership, actually. So there's no one who I work with who's still there, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But no, I have a good rapport with the people that I know. I know the chairman. We all sit on various boards and charity events, that sort of thing. So no, I mean, I think one of the great things with Savile Row and the main houses, though, everyone, some people could assume that a Savarov suit is a Savarov suit, but it's, you know, each house produces slightly differently, each house cuts slightly differently, and each house has a slightly different atmosphere and ambience. So that's really where we are with that.
Richard, could you tell me, out of curiosity, what it is that sets you apart and distinguishes you on Savile Row, talking about how different house has a different style?
I think it's honestly the cut, honestly. I mean, I was taught to cut from a very traditional way of cutting. You know, when a cutter cuts for a customer, he takes a set of measurements. In my case, I take 19 measurements. But the measurements don't tell you the full story. The measurements won't tell you how the guy stands or the lady stands. In other words, their figuration. So what we mean by the figuration is one shoulder higher or lower than the other one? Is one sort of a knee bowed out more than the other? Is one having a corpulent sort of stomach or a long back, flat back? All these sort of things are taken into consideration. And a cutter, really, what he must do then is put those two ingredients together, if you see what I mean, the measures and the figuration, plus a little bit of his artistic eye and the customer's personality, and cut an individual pattern. So each one is different for that. And I think what we do, we have a very distinctive house style, which is based on a method of cutting called the Thornton system, which is a 19th century way of cutting. And the balance of the garment that one can achieve with that Thornton system is fabulous. There's no need to sort of reinvent the wheel and think you can do it better than that system. But within that framework, what you can do, you can put your own stamp on it. In other words, then you have to allow for the customer's figuration, their personality, and your artistic sort of bent in that system. And I think all those ingredients goes into making a very distinctive silhouette that we at Richard Anderson are known for. And really the look of it is pretty based on a riding coat. So if you start at the top of the coat, the shoulders are really quite natural. There's a small amount of padding in the shoulders. There's no rope to the sleeve head at all. It's just one continuous line from the shoulder seam going into the sleeve seam. The armholes we cut quite high, and that's for two reasons. One, for ease of movement, so one can move the arm forward, you know, without restriction. Mm-hmm. And also, secondly, is to get a nice long line through the side seam, which is designed to make anyone look a little bit taller and slimmer than they actually are. So, in other words, you're looking to accentuate the good parts of the body and maybe disguise the bits that aren't quite as good.
Now, from what I understand, there's always an apprentice and the master, a little bit in tailoring terms, at least, and in, I guess, Star Wars terms. I was just watching an interview with your business partner, Mr. Lishak.
Yes, of course.
He was telling me about how there would always be someone underneath the main cutter so that we could then parlay these skills onto other apprentices and juniors so that, you know, the trade, the skill doesn't die out. Can I ask, do you still employ that tactic? Do you have someone working under you, direct under you?
Oh, no, very much so. It's very important, actually, yes. I mean, we've got on the cutting side, we have got a young man who's been with me maybe 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And is making good progress, and is just he's got a few of his own customers for trousers. You normally start them on trousers and develop them into coats. And we're hoping to get him on to have his own coat customers by the end or early next year, I'd say.
Right.
So that is still very, very prevalent. And also, you know, it's important because, you know, I'm just over 50 now, so my range of customers stretches from obviously 20 to, you know, we're lucky at Richard Anderson that we have a very broad range of customers. We're not just pigeonholed into sort of CEOs between, you know, 55 and 70. So you need younger cutters that are going to appeal to the younger audience, because in 5-10 years time I won't be quite as relevant to, you know, the 20 year olds and the 30 year olds that are ordering.
Right.
So you need that longevity. So that's on the cutting side, and on the making side, we've got two apprentices who've both been with me for 7 and 5 years now, who are both qualified, who are making very good coats. They're in their late 20s, early 30s, and we've just started another trainee as well. So it's very important to keep those keep that momentum going, actually. And I think we're also lucky in the respect that the young people, certainly in the last 10, 12 years, have really wanted to come on board and see Savile Row as a very, and the tailoring industry as a very up-and-coming industry.
Yeah. And if you don't mind me asking, how do you incentivize your trainees to stay with you beyond the point of, you know, their graduation, shall we say, that they don't get great big ideas of themselves and want to set up another shop, for example?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Well, listen, you have to play the percentages to a certain extent, but we like to think that we look after our young people when they do come through. You know, we do look after them well, we pay them well. And of course, you've got to be alive to that, but let's touch wood, we've been okay on that front so far.
Okay, so Richard, I want to talk about your book, the new book, Making the Cut.
Yes.
How long did it take to get a book like this together, and how do you carve out the time to actually write a book in the first place?
Yes, I mean, this is the second book. My first book I did 2008, 2009, which was a longer process, actually. That was sort of 5 years. This one was actually about 3 years, actually. And what I wanted to do, I wanted to do something different. I felt that most of the books on Savile Row were sort of fairly dry biographies, so I wanted to make this one informative, with a little bit of personality as well, and be something that not only would be good to look at, but would be good to read as well, actually. And the inspiration for it was really 25 sort of fairly iconic looks, but which were done in a more modern take, if you see what I mean. And some of the garments amongst those 25, one wouldn't associate with being made on Savile Row, i.e. duffel coats or bomber jackets, that sort of thing. Mm. But again, it was amalgamation of sort of 25 pieces that over the last, let's say, since we formed Richard Anderson, have been talking points. So in other words, a customer would come in, see a certain garment, walk, you know, hanging up, and go straight to, gosh, what's that? And, you know, it would create a discussion for sort of 15, 20 minutes or however long it was. They might not order it, but it would lead to a discussion. And so my thinking was, well, if they're interested in that, then other people would be as well, really. So, and I also felt that that sort of book would be unique coming from a Savile Row tailor stroke designer.
The book's coming out. You're off to America soon. You've got a tour coming up. So you'll be in New York September 13th to 15th. Boston.
That's right.
I've got them written scripts down here.
Good.
Boston.
I'm glad you've got it.
So New York 13th to the 15th. Boston 17th. Yeah. Chicago 19th. San Francisco 21st to 22nd. Beverly Hills 24th. Yeah. Houston on the 26th and finishing up in Washington DC 28th and 29th September. That's quite the roadshow.
It is, and we do that three times a year, Peter, and we've done that. You know that we've done that religiously since we started January, May, and September. So you know we go out there, we service our American clients out there, and it's a big part of our business, especially on the East Coast.
Yeah, I bet. And how does the business work then? So you'll measure them up, you'll then take those measurements back to Savile Row, presumably, but they can't come back and forth for third and fourth fittings, I'm guessing, or can they?
They can. I mean, the majority of our customers we will see over in England as well. It's unusual that you just see people in America. I mean, our core customer base are very business orientated, so they're flying all over the world. So, you know, of course, we do have the odd American customer that doesn't travel, but the majority, especially in New York and on the East Coast, you'll see them in London and you also see them in America, actually.
Right. And
that speeds up the process, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's it like when you do go out to America? You obviously see your clients. Is it then a bit of a meet and greet? Do you take them out for drinks afterwards? How friendly do you get with your clients?
I don't do that enormously, Peter. No, I don't do that. I mean, the work we design our working day into half an hour slots from 8:30 till 6. The majority, virtually 95% of those slots will go in New York. So quite frankly, by the time you have the... It's nice to have a bit of privacy in the evening and go out for a nice dinner, quite frankly. It's really work fitting customers, taking orders during the day, nice dinner, and then go again the next day.
I guess it's a massive thing seeing your tailor. And obviously, if a tailor's made a real special trip to America, you know, I would feel obliged to go, right, you're coming out with us tonight. And then you have to kind of draw the line somewhere,
of course.
Right?
Yeah, no, of course, sometimes. And sometimes the customer thing does you know evolve into friendship over time, of course. Mm-hmm. But it's really just the working day, and also, you know, we're there three times a year, Peter, as well, actually, so it's not as if you're just going there once every two or three years sort of thing. So we really are there fairly regularly.
You talk about how Richard Anderson, the brand, is hoping to break down those don't come in barriers, you know, that's associated with some of the rigidity that you might see on Savile Row. How do you embrace these new trends, and how do you embrace, you know, the modern way of retail?
Well, I think I think what we wanted to do, I think, if we go back to when we first started in 2000, both myself and Brian came from very traditional houses, and there's nothing wrong with those houses at all, I must say. I mean, great institutions, but I felt it was all sort of dark wood, stag heads on the wall, that sort of thing. And I felt that sort of atmosphere could emphasize the word could be intimidating for certain sort of my age group at the time, sort of 30-ish, mid-30s, that sort of thing. You look over the road to the new generation of tailors come stylists that are around in sort of like mid to late 90s, you know, your Richard James, your sort of Botanes. And what they did, they sort of made the whole thing a little bit fresher and a little bit more comfortable, I think. What I saw was we could do that without sacrificing the quality that we'd learned in a very traditional house. So I wanted to sort of like bring those two worlds together, really. Mm. So that was really what our plan was in 2000. And what we did, we just painted the walls white. We had some modern art in there. The customers were much friendlier to us. It was quite an interesting. We hadn't our style hadn't changed in serving and cutting and making, but just because of the atmosphere of the shop, the customer and the customer was much more friendly and relaxed, I think. So I think we've it's almost like the restaurant trade years ago. It was all sort of like the guys in the sort of red velvet sort of blazers escorting you to these plush red velvet tables. Now all of a sudden you've got these fantastic new restaurants. So it was kind of that vibe. And so we've really run with that for the last 16, 70 years. It's been very successful. The key, though, and I must stress, the key is not to sacrifice the quality of the cut, the service, or the make, and even, you know, keep improving it. Yeah. And again, here, as against my other company, we're very into, and I really enjoy sort of working with different fabrics, and I think the book will show some of those fabrics, like the sequin fabric, something like that, and the, you know, fabrics that, you know, my old masters at Huntsman would never touch, you know, would never do. Yeah. You know, they'd never cut a duffel coat, they'd never cut a bomber jacket, they'd never make a sequin dinner jacket, they'd never make a jacket with one peak lapel and one notch lapel. So, you know, we enjoy doing that, and we enjoy sort of the more fashion side of things as well, obviously.
That sounds fantastic. You're the first new tailor on Savile Row for something like 50 years, is that right?
Something like that, Pete. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely, yes.
So I guess, in a way, it is up to you, you know, being the relatively new boys on the block, to kind of propel it forward. I mean, I should say I'm knee-deep in this book at the minute by, I forget the author's name, but it's a biography on Tommy Nutter.
Tommy Nutter, yes.
And he came in, obviously, with Edward Sexton at the time.
Of course.
And he brought down the frosted windows that was
so
prevalent on Savile Row, and it kind of had that invitation feel. And all the stories about how Elton John would come in and just go, right, that's it, we'll have to shut the shop for the day because we'll have to get absolutely stinking drunk. And he had that rapport, really, with a lot of his clients, you know.
He did. I mean, it's funny you say that, but we are the relatively new kids on the block. But, you know, saying that, myself and my business partner, Brian Lishek, have got sort of like something like 80 years experience on Savile Row between us. So it's kind of, but as a company, we are very new at 16, 17 years old compared to, you know, the 200-year-old Henry Pools, Deej and Huntsman's, and those sort of guys. But I think going back to the question of how the rows evolved, really, maybe since I've been there, I think fewer tailors. I think that's the first thing, fewer true tailors. Mm. It's kind of more design-led, especially on the other side of the streets where I am, Peter. Mm. Which, again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all, because, you know, but I think that would be the biggest change. I mean, when I started in 1982, and Brian, when he started, whenever he started in the 40s or the 50s, Savile Row was, you know, not only the shop fronts, but all the offices upstairs, and, you know, it was all full of tailors. So that's the amount of true tailors now has diminished.
Right.
But really, you know, it's up to us, Peter, to be better than the ready-to-wears, to offer better service, to better quality. And there's always going to be the customer that cannot get something ready-to-wear, you know, that he likes and wants to have something designed individually for himself.
I guess I'm kind of groping for what, alongside with, you know, the new openings and these new movements, design-led stores, Abercrombie and Fitch coming in at number three, I think it is. What are the biggest, would you say, like the massive key moments where you can look back and say, now that was a turning point for Savile Row?
Well, I think when Abercrombie did come in, that was 12, 15 years ago. So that was a big change, actually. And then, of course, what that does, I mean, it's good in one respect, that it brings a different sort of footfall to the row. So that's one thing.
Right.
But obviously, you have to offset it for the rents that some of these big brands can pay compared to us guys.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a two-edged sword, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And also from the quality side as well, of course, because that's all we're always very aware of the quality of the merchandise being sold in Savile Row. You know, one has to be alive to that.
Yes. Yeah.
But key moments, I think Abercrombie and Fitch, I think. But really, the companies, although they've changed hands, Peter, that would be Kilgowns, Henry Pools, Huntsman's, Deej and Skinner, have been consistent for many years there.
I just want to remind people again that the Making the Cut book is out now, available to buy on Amazon.
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, it is out.
It was out, end of April.
Richard Anson there. And Richard and I also talked on a little bit further about some of the clients that comes into the shop there in Savile Row. We put that up on another podcast called From Tailors With Love, which is more orientated around the style of James Bond. So you can also find that on iTunes. But here's a quick clip. Do you get approached at all from any TV productions or any film productions to provide the costumes?
We haven't actually. We you know, we've got individual actors, you know, Hollywood actors and people like that we make the clothes for.
Sure.
But we haven't been involved in any, you know, doing clothes for big productions at all. No. But I mean, on the Hollywood side, we could talk about Sir Ian McKellen. We've made clothes for him.
Oh, wow.
We've made Benicio del Toro, again, another actor. We've made clothes for him. George Michael was a client of mine. Brian Ferry, the rock star. So all sorts of people, even going back to, you know, Lucian Freud, the painter.
So you can check the DVD extras, if you will, over on From Tailors With Love. That's available on iTunes. But now we're going to be speaking to Beck Lodes, Editor-at-Large for Menswear Style. I'd like to introduce Beck Lodes. Beck, you don't need any introduction. Beck Lodes, Editor-at-Large for Menswear Style. How are you doing today, Bex?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well. Okay, so today's, what day is it? Thursday.
It is.
Last night was Man of the Year Awards for GQ.
It was indeed.
And we're going to have a quick look at the runners and riders that hit the red carpet last night. So all of the pictures are out in the press. You can go to GQ or just type GQ Man of the Year Awards, and also go over to Menswear Style, because I'm sure we'll be doing a feature on this soon. Let's start from the top, eh? Prince Charles rocked up.
He did.
Looking
very smart.
He did. I mean, look, he doesn't really have to go too far to dress well, because I think he's got his, he's got a bottomless pocket to actually go out and buy bespoke suits from Geezer's Walk or get his shirts from Turnbull and NASA. So, you know, he can't really go too wrong. Yeah, right. He was very self-effacing with some of his quips about how he turned up in a lounge jacket because he didn't want to outdo everyone in his fancy tuxedos, etc.
Yeah, it went down really well, actually. I think his speech went down really well with everyone, so good on him.
Yeah, always looking immaculate. But the stylish man of the year was given to John Legend, right?
It was indeed. Yeah, he was busting out the velvet in a nice sort of very dark sort of inky blue velvet suit, I think from Hugo Boss, and velvet slippers to match.
Yeah, definitely. And he looks actually pristine on this. The lines on his jacket just follow him so well, don't they?
Yeah, they look very smart.
Yep, and you've got a picture of Ollie Cheshire standing next to him, looking very Sean Connery with the white ivory dinner jacket and the red boutonniere.
Yeah, it looks nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, smart. Marks and Spencer's, very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what do you think of the white dinner jacket over black waistcoat, black trouser?
Yeah, it's not something you see all the time, actually. I think it's quite, in some ways, it's quite a brave look. But it looks smart. He does look smart.
I think you can be quite forgiving when someone's that good looking.
Yeah, true.
You know, you don't always then have to scrutinise everything else, because you're already starting from a place of affection, aren't you?
Very true.
I said affection, not erection, just for the record. And his mate standing next to him is Ollie Proudlock. Now, Ollie has turned up in a real Bobby Dazzler, hasn't he?
Yes, he definitely went all out. He's definitely a standout, that's for sure, with the loud print. I think it was sort of the gold on black, wasn't it? Mm.
Yeah, so gold butterfly, floral print. The jacket is black. Shawl collar and the waistcoat looks to be a very wraparound double-breasted waistcoat, if that makes sense. You'll have to go on the website and have a look at it, but it's looking fantastic. And that's got, like we mentioned earlier, that's got to be Joshua Kane, right?
I think so. Yeah, must be. He's a big fan. So,
by the way, if anyone's wondering why we're zooming through this so quick, it's because we recorded about 20 minutes of us looking and Googling at pictures before I realised that the recorder wasn't on.
So we're starting again.
But it's okay. I get to crack the same jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
Who else? Who else was a standout on the red carpet for you?
We've got some more velvet from Sacha Baron Cohen. He was picking up an award on the night. That was a Paul Smith suit. Also, again, very nice. We had, of course, legend Jeff Goldblum. I think he was one of the standouts as well. He has to be.
Yeah, he won Icon of Awesomeness or something like that.
Yeah, it was the Hay Club Icon.
Yeah, so I think Mark Hamill won it last year, and Simon Pegg gave him the award. And this year, was it Tom Huddleston or Tim Huddleston gave him the award, and he turned up in this silver and gold two tone. It looks like a silk and viscose blend, if I'm going to have a guess at it, but it just pairs so well with like this grey silver tie and shirt and his silver stubble and the grey hair, etc. It's all coming through. It's a great colour combination, isn't it?
Yeah, it was nice, really nice. And his zebra stripe brogue's pretty snazzy.
Yeah. You're going to have to send me a picture of that. I still haven't seen it.
Oh, really? Yeah. They're very cool. Look, yeah. Very nice.
I'm looking at his head and just thinking, that'll do me. What else? So outside the GQ Man of the Year Awards.
All the madness of last night.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to tell you this. They invited me a couple of years ago to cover this award. Hugo Boss were kind enough to invite us down on behalf of Menswear Style. They gave me a tuxedo, kicked me out a nice tux, nice bow tie, yeah, cufflinks. I even bought myself some brogues, though. So I think I splashed out on about £200 on some patent leather Hugo Boss shoes. I couldn't just walk up into this tux just wearing my crappy Converse. And it was really cool, because I went there for the whole day. Not the whole day, but obviously the dinner. So some people only get invited to the after party.
Okay.
And some people are lucky enough to go to the whole dinner. I've kind of slipped down the pecking order. So the year after that, I went to the after party, and this year, you know, invites lost in the post. So
of course, I'm mine too.
But turned up for the dinner. Now, when you go to these sort of awards, the coolest thing about these awards is that everyone has to use the same toilet. Right, there's no VIP toilet for Ricky Gervais. He has to come and slum it with us influencers, right? And I'm talking to someone. I'm looking over their shoulder, looking at Ricky. I'm thinking, I do wonder if what I'd say to him if I met him at the urinal, because I'm about to go to the toilet, and I could somehow predict his trajectory as well through the room, that he's actually going towards the toilet as well, but stopping and shaking hands. Anyway, I go to the toilet and do my toilet thing. And when I come out, Ricky's coming in. So I hold open the door for Ricky Gervais as he's coming through the toilet.
Yeah.
I was like, hey. He goes, thank you. And just kind of squirrels underneath my arm as he, you know, if you can imagine that I'm holding it up in a real lofty manner for him. And he just goes in. And I don't have anything to say to him. But I thought, if I, you know, had that been 1 minute sooner, we would have been both at the urinal together next to each other, shoulder by shoulder. Right? Anyway, I wrote about this in a blog and I posted it on a different website, and they got hold of me, GQ, and asked me to take it down. They said, we don't need you to explain your inner dialogue when you're thinking about Ricky Gervais and the urinal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. I didn't realise that would cause so much offence.
I know. They're very, very precious over there. They don't want you to add any unnecessary colour to the story, should we say.
Right, wow, no stories of conversations in the bathrooms then.
Yeah, with Ricky Gervais. It's not like the most scandalous story either. It's not like I embellished any of it. Anyway.
Oh, well, at least it's a good story to tell.
Thank you. Sorry, I digressed massively. What else outside of the GQ Man of the Year Awards is happening?
So we had the 30th anniversary of River Island. They're celebrating at the moment. They had a great campaign earlier on in the year, which was looking at removing labels from people. So they had all sorts of different age and size and gender fluid models in the campaign. And they're kind of following on with their celebrations by releasing a capsule collection, which is online now. It came out on the 30th of August. And you can read some more about it on Menswear Style now.
Okay, yeah, it's over there. I did have a look at the blog because it just literally went live about 10 minutes before we jumped on the phone. Yeah. I like the denim jacket with this kind of gold jacquard pattern over the elbows. I think that's the real winner.
They've definitely sort of gone all out for it. I was quite surprised when I saw the photos, but it's a very luxe looking collection. But there's sort of, they've styled embroidered hoodies, like with badges on the, with a nice, smart tailored coat. So it's kind of this informal look, but you can wear it from day to night. So yeah, some nice tailored trousers, a nice leather bomber. There's a bomber jacket, a suede bomber jacket, and then a leather jacket, biker jacket. And they range from, the collection ranges from £25 to £250 for the leather jacket. So it's pretty well priced.
Yeah, evenly priced, as they say. I like the little spiel, the history that you gave. I didn't know any about this, about how it used to be called Lewis Separates, and it was all like a family run business beforehand. I mean, Lewis Separates is just a terrible name.
I know.
Horrible.
Not what you'd ideally go for, but I think they were just starting out, and they've gone from strength to strength, I guess, and it's still a family-owned business. Well, the majority is still owned by the family, so they're still very much involved. So yeah, it's interesting.
Thank you, Beck Lodes, and thank you, Richard Anson, for coming on the show. Make sure, if you're in America, you're checking out his tour diary. I make him sound like Bruce Springsteen. He's playing near a town near you, son. Thank you for listening. That's it for this episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. Remember, it's only fashion, people, and you're never fully dressed without a smile.